Okay, we're just about to commence the class. Hope everything, everybody's doing well today. I'm going to do a brief audio check before we start. Once you hear the audio, just type audio okay at the bottom of your screen. And they'll just confirm for us that you can pick up the audio fine. And then we'll just start the class momentarily. And again, once you hear the audio, just type in audio okay at the bottom of your screen, and we'll get started just momentarily after the audio check. And again, today's class will be archived. We'll have it recorded, so this way shortly after the class is over, if you missed any part of it, you'll be able to hear the entire class from its commencement. In today's class, we'll be taking questions from you as opposed to any scheduled subject. We thought that a lot of people have the day off tonight, so it might be advantageous to use that time for any questions that you might have. Okay, Bill, Texas, good to see you. JTT in Dallas. All right, Marlene in Israel, nice to see you too. Thank you for the confirmation. Okay. And again, once you once you hear the audio, just do a favor and just put a confirmation that you're picking up the audio fine by typing audio okay at the bottom of the screen. Again, once you, if you have questions, your questions will be responded to, and once we prompt you for typing in what your questions are, and we'll try to take them in an orderly fashion, so this way we can address everybody's question. Okay, Pega 48, thank you for the confirmation. Dango in Edmonton, thank you. Gene, thank you for the audio. Okay, Ron M., are you picking up the audio? Okay, Ari, thanks for the confirmation. All right, looks like most of you have the audio all right. I'll just wait another moment or two, since it's just about only like a minute or two after four right now. All right, Joseph, thank you. And again, any of you that actually have picked up the audio already and you have the questions, so you may want to start typing in your questions on screen. And this way we can see what's concerning you, anything maybe you've read in the Jewish Times or questions just in general. That's the purpose of the class today. Just use the, a lot of you, again, have the day off, so it would be advantageous to use the time for some study. And questions are always an essential part of Torah study. And we'll limit the questions to the topic of either Jewish philosophy or different areas of the Torah, or maybe prophets. Okay, so it looks like most of you have this, the audio is fine, so why don't we start? And again, the class today is to address your questions. So you can type your questions on screen, make them succinct and, you know, direct. And I saw there was a couple of, there was some dialogue going on before we started today. So if there are questions on that topic, feel free to type them in. Okay, Paul, thanks. You got the audio? All right, so now the ball is in your court. Let's see your questions. So the first question we see is Marlene from Israel. Okay, Marlene, good to see you. Marlene is asking, why does God have to come down to the world to see the sins of the world? Can't he see it from his dwelling? It would be good if you could give a reference to that. When you're making a statement, you'd be beneficial to refer to a point that you're questioning. If you're making a statement that God comes down to the world, we know that God doesn't take up space, he's not physical. So there's no movement, there's no bodily activity, because God does not have a body. So when it says, perhaps what you're referring to is when God says that, I think it was by the people of the flood, the generation of the flood, that God said he'll go down and see, or by the Tower of Babel. So that has to be taken in a metaphoric manner. Because God, of course, is not physical, so he can't come down. There can't be any locomotion. Even when we say that God fills the whole world, it doesn't mean that here is a piece of God or that God in some way is physical and in the world. It means that his evidence is true and witnessed in everything in creation. And Marlene is saying, I thought you knew the scripture. Well, that's what I think you're referring to, but if you're asking the question, Marlene, it would be good for you to cite exactly what you're talking about. Many times a person will ask a question, but it's not really based on anything in truth. So it's important that a question on Torah should be based in something which you know for a fact. So therefore, I'm asking you to quote what you're referring to. I believe it's those two areas that you're talking about. So it does not mean that God has to come down and see. God has knowledge, which we don't understand how his knowledge works, but he has complete knowledge of all of his creation. So there's no need for him to come down. It's impossible for God to move. God is not physical. So anything that takes place in the physical world cannot be applied to God. That's something which he said through his prophets, that to what can you equate me to that I can be similar? Right? God said that those words. I mean, to say there's nothing that we can equate God to. That includes physical activity or moving. Okay, it's a very important thing. We're actually going through the area of the fundamentals, and we actually recorded a number of classes already on our the audio files link on our site. If you'd like to listen to those classes, we took up the fundamentals, which start with knowledge of God, knowing that he is exclusively the cause for everything in creation, and also that he's not physical, and nothing physical can be attributed to him. There's no division. The concept of saying that there's a piece of God in people is based on a fallacy. That's a misquote from the book of Job. There can't be pieces to something which is not physical, just like the law of gravity. You wouldn't say that you can locate the law of gravity. You could see the effects of gravity, but you can't take the law of gravity and cut it up into pieces. You cannot. That does not apply to something which is not physical. Okay, Gene in South Carolina is asking, what is the origin of placing the stones on a tomb? Meaning, I assume you're talking about putting rocks on top of a gravestone. That's not, actually, I heard a rabbi once mention that is not really, has nothing to do with Judaism. what happened was that certain cemeteries were being ransacked by marauders, and in order to make the cemetery look like it wasn't inactive, so when people would go there, they would put a stone, a rock on top of the gravestone, just in order to show that there was some activity by this place, and maybe just to ward off any would-be ransackers. But it's not a Jewish idea. Okay, Lucy is asking, why was oil used to anoint ancient Hebrew kings? And again, if there's any questions that I pass by, because sometimes the text goes a little bit fast on screen, and if I don't address your question, please type it in again. I don't want to pass up any questions. Anything which I can answer, I'd like to be able to. Okay, so Lucy's asking, why was oil used to anoint ancient Hebrew kings? Good question. In terms of what oil was used for, oil is something which was sort of like a balm in the olden times. It would be a way for them to cool off because, like you know, the way the human body works, when a person is very warm and the body starts to get overheated, so you'll start sweating. And sweat is a mechanism that the body produces that God designed in order to be the radiator system for the human body. We use the same mechanism to cool down a car engine. So you see the certain basic concepts work in all areas. So when a person is very hot, he starts sweating, and when the wind hits his sweat, specifically by his forehead, because the head is where 90% of the body heat escapes. So the sweat combination with the air hitting it will cool down the person. It'll cool down the blood temperature. The same reason exists why elephants flap their ears and why God designed them in that way with that behavior, is that there are a lot of blood vessels in the ears of the elephant. And by moving his ears back and forth, and you see the ears are very large because the animal is very large and there's a lot of body mass that has to be cooled off. So therefore, a lot of blood is cooled off simultaneously by the elephant flapping its ears back and forth. And what that does is the cooled off blood recirculates with the body, and then it cools off the animal. The same thing with other animals that have large ears. So in terms of the oil, so oil is something which evaporates at a much slower rate than water does. So in order to mimic what the cooling off process is of the body, but in a more durable fashion, so people would use oil in the olden times. And that's how they'd put some oil on their head, and it would stay there for a long time because oil doesn't evaporate quickly. And when the breeze would come, it would cool them off, and they wouldn't have to sweat. So it was a means by which it was in a certain way, it was an adornment to the person. It made the person feel good. So it was a positive entity. Oil on a person was a positive entity. So perhaps that's why they used oil, in order to designate who was a positive person, who was a leader now. So oil was used just as a physical means of demarcating that. There may be other reasons, but just to answer, I would say that would be one idea. Okay, Jay in Florida is asking, was Exodus day after death of Egyptians firstborn or 6 months? If 6 months, why matzah? Was there no rush? Yeah, Exodus was the day after the death of the firstborn, correct. The Egyptians had chased the Jews out. Okay, so it was not 6 months. I don't know where you're getting the 6 months from. Okay, and again, if there's any follow-up questions on those of you who have answered the question, feel free to type it again. You may also want to do this. If you are writing a follow-up question, just put those words in, follow-up, before your question so I could see that it's referring back to something earlier. All right, Joseph has a question. Joseph's question is, how does one approach a prominent rabbi who says that because the world was created for the sake of Israel, the tsunami, which occurs only in the Pacific, was a warning to the Jewish people? His premise is that the non-Jewish world is here to serve us, and the tsunami was a warning to us because we lost our essence and our souls completely. Okay. No problem on the long question, Joseph. So you're questioning, how do you respond to a prominent rabbi who makes a claim that tsunami was God's will? Well, I mean, where is his proof that this is God's will? How does a person have arrogant to a very high degree to say that you know that this tsunami was caused by God? I mean, the greatest prophets would only say something was God's doing when God told them. So he has no right to say that God did this. He has no The question is not how to approach him. The question is how would he make a statement of this nature when he did not have any communication from God on this. All right, so that's and the idea that the non-Jewish nations are here for us is completely false. I mean, God did not create Jew and non-Jew. God created Adam and Eve, man and woman. It was later on, there was idolatrous practices that cropped up throughout the generation. Throughout the generations. Eventually, God gave a system of Torah about 2,500 years later. But you see, the initial plan was that man would have the ideas, he would be created perfectly, Adam and Eve, and they'd pass it on to their children, and they would teach the whole world, and there would be one basic system of philosophy for the whole world. There weren't these divisions of religion as part of God's plan. So the concept to say that the other nations are here to serve us, yeah, the truth is, it's just the opposite. We were given the Torah because Abraham was monotheistic. He, more than anybody else, demonstrated how a person could be living the most corrupt life. He was an idolater himself, but he used his intelligence and extricated himself from an idolatrous life. And God saw this and said he's going to make a nation from him, and this nation will be the recipients of the Torah in order to teach the rest of the world the right ideas. And you see how many laws, the negative commands in the Torah, are, like Maimonides says, come to uproot the false ideas of the idolaters. We have so many different holidays to attack the false notions of the Egyptians and the Jews coming out of Egypt to slaughter the lamb. What was that for? To show that the Egyptian god, the lamb, was nothing. They had to demonstrate that before they can really be the recipients of the Torah. They had to remove themselves from being a people that were hedonistic. So circumcision was also necessary at that time. So it is not true that non-Jews are any less than Jews. That is false. That is not part of Judaism. Just because we have a system doesn't make us better. We are the ones that have to teach the world. That was God's plan. Had God given the Torah to some other people, they would be the ones that have to teach, and we'd have to learn from them. So there has to be one group that finally had the right ideas and then teaches the rest of the world. Okay. Tom Howe, his question is as follows. Whereas the apostles and Yeshua were Torah observant, why doesn't the Orthodox Jew accept their teaching? So Tom Howe is asking if the apostles and, meaning I think you mean Jesus, Yeshua. So the apostles and Jesus were Jewish, were Torah observant. Well, they weren't because they went against a lot of laws. The Gospels openly talk about how Jesus says, the Torah says this, but I say that. Numerous times, Jesus himself is on record as saying something against God. All right. Furthermore, why doesn't the Orthodox Jew accept their teaching? Well, the Orthodox Jew doesn't accept anybody's teaching. A person could be an observant Jew, but if he's veering off and says that God is really three, which is what Christianity holds, but they can't even defend that position because it's a ridiculous position. And then God himself says in the Deuteronomy, I am God, I am one. And to say that there's three parts to God, I mean, there's numerous mistakes, numerous grave errors. So we don't follow anybody who makes a grave error. Even Aaron, the brother of Moses, did not follow Moses when he knew Moses was making a mistake. He questioned Moses, and then Moses saw that he was wrong, and he admitted to Aaron. Okay, so we don't follow. It doesn't matter that somebody was born into a Orthodox practicing family, whether the apostles were Jewish or not, or Jesus. If a person has the wrong ideas, you don't follow them, period. You have to follow what the system of the Torah is. That's undiluted. That's why God included in the system of the Torah, don't add onto the commands and don't detract. Because since God created human beings, he, more than anybody else, knows human nature. And God knew that there would be the nature of people to try to be over-religious or less religious. So God put that, he preempted that in the Torah. And he wrote that you should not be over-religious and add on to the Torah system, and you shouldn't be less. So Jesus coming along and abrogating or changing things in the Torah, completely an arrogant attempt to overstep what God's rules are. That's what we don't follow. All right? And just their ideas themselves are really completely against reason. We don't follow anything which is not based in reason. Jay in Florida is writing, follow-up. I got the 6 months from a commentary in the Stone Chumash from Art Scroll. All right, if you want to email it, I never heard of that. It seemed to be clear that right from the verses in the Torah, The Egyptians, there wasn't one household that didn't have a firstborn that was dead. So the next day they chased them out. The Jews did not stick around 6 more months after that. As a matter of fact, it was 50 days from when they left Egypt that they got the Torah on Sinai. So they were traveling from that point. Okay, Jay, follow up. Jay is saying, maybe the slavery ended. I mean, that could be like you're saying. Maybe the slavery ended 6 months before they left. That could be. But the firstborns dying and then leaving, that was the next day. Okay, Paul in Oregon has a question. Do Orthodox Jews believe in Kabbalah? What was the origin of Kabbalah? Yes, Kabbalah, the word, simply means received. I mean, the word to be mikabel, kabel, or Kabbalah, just means something you received, meaning the traditions of the rabbis that you received. But these ideas, the rabbis, I believe Maimonides said, we don't have it anymore because the Kabbalah refers to the body of knowledge that can be traced back unbroken to Moses. And nobody today has any lineage back, his rabbi to his previous rabbi and all the way back up to Moses. That does not exist today. So therefore, nobody today is in receipt of what was actually said by Moses and passed down through the generations. That is just not intact today. But Kabbalah basically is ideas. They have to be true ideas. It's none of this black magic, hocus pocus. Judaism does not buy into this black magic. I mean, psychics, all these different things that the people claim in the world today. They're looking for a quick fix. They're looking to take care of their insecurities. So they make up these things. And when the rabbis speak about let's say magic that the Egyptians did, if you look at the rabbi's words, it's sleight of hand that they use. They didn't have no powers. Everything in the world is created by God. So it has the only power a human being has, I don't care if it's an Egyptian astrologer or a person today, the only power a human being has is muscular power. That's it. There's no mind reading ability. There's no magical ability. We have basic, a limited set of abilities, and that's all that we can put into action. Okay, looks like next question is Marlene in Israel. And Marlene writes, I'm referring now to Joseph's question. When looking up at the word because in the concordance, I found why God is angry. It would be nice if we make a study. Okay, Farazan in, I guess it's Louisiana or Los Angeles. His question is as follows. Is arrival of the Mashiach something Hashem is preparing for us so that the world will not be surprised, or is he suddenly to appear when we least expect it? I don't know. How God will bring it about, I do not know. Okay. Okay, so let's see if we answered the questions up to this point. And again, if a question was not fully answered, feel free to just retype it in. But I think it's important to reiterate. Actually, there's one more question. Let me just see if I answered it in full. The question regarding tsunami again. The rabbi had a premise. This is Joseph's question earlier. His premise, meaning I guess the rabbi's premise, is that the non-Jewish world of his serve us. Okay, we said that that's false. Again, if a person says something, you should never be afraid to ask. The rabbis say, actually, that lo habayishin lo meid, a person who is embarrassed will not learn. So you cannot shy away from anybody. If you have a question, you must ask it. And like I said earlier, different classes, I always mention the comment that the only poor question is a question which is not asked. That's the only poor question. So don't ever feel insecure about asking. If something is concerning you, you have to ask. Again, the rabbi also was quoted as saying, this rabbi who says tsunami was God's action to warn the Jewish people, he says, because we lost our essence and our souls completely. Okay. Well, again, there's a lot of statements that this rabbi is making, and a lot of times, I was actually just reading today that Maimonides says that a person who puts undue fear on the public, meaning on the community, it's a very grave sin. Okay, a couple more questions. Okay, Chaim on the west side. You said everything was created by God. You earlier said, how do we know that God created the tsunami? When I say, yes, when we say everything is created by God, that means God put the entire universe into action. He created it from nothing, and he governs it. Okay? But in terms of the tsunami taking place, that is something which took place because of the forces that exist in the earth. So based on the way the world was created, there were going to be mudslides in L.A. last week. There was going to be a tsunami 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. This is not something which you have to say God is willing right now. This is the laws of nature at work. Now, if there were righteous people in that area, I'm sure God stepped in and saved them, because that's the principle that we follow. And the person is not deserving of God stepping in. So then whatever nature is going to dish out to the world, it is going to be, people will be affected now and then. But Maimonides does say that if you look at the entire world's history, you'll notice that most countries have been free from any type of devastation for thousands of years. Sometimes there's devastation, but that doesn't mean God is willing it to happen. All right, so that should answer the question. Chaim on the west side. All right, so when we say that God created everything, yes, God caused the existence of everything. But there are laws of nature. That's also part of what God created. All right, Chaim. So if God created laws of nature, that means that they will unfold in the regular way. Okay, just like if there's certain heating up in the atmosphere, so it's going to cause a certain amount of melting of snow caps, and then maybe certain animals will get washed away and they'll die, or certain people that are living on those mountains. All right. If, however, a person is very righteous, and God's equation is that he deserves divine providence, so God will step in somehow. Okay, so I hope that answers the question. Yaakov said, I attended a bris yesterday, and the moel said, the moel said, maybe this baby will grow up to bring world peace. I thought that the Messiah had to be from the line of King David. Yes, the Messiah has to be from the line of King David. What the person who did the circumcision on the baby was giving a nice wish. He didn't say that the baby is going to be the Messiah. He just says, maybe the baby will grow up to bring world peace. You could bring world peace without being the Messiah. Shana is asking, what is the origin of Kabbalah? Well, again, Kabbalah means what was received, the oral traditions, the oral Torahs that were handed down going back to Moses. So it originated at Sinai. But that chain has been broken, so we don't have Kabbalah in our midst today. And certainly when it's written down, it's not Kabbalah anymore. Something that's written down, the Kabbalah was supposed to be passed over orally. Once you write it down, it loses its status. So it's not Kabbalah anymore. Okay, Marlene in Israel is saying, about what you said about Jesus, Yeshua, if he is Messiah, the true Messiah, then he could have the authority to add or distract. No, that's not true, Marlene. First of all, he didn't do anything to show that he was Messiah. He just did Jesus did the things to show, to discredit. He didn't have any type of lineage according to what they say because of Immaculate Conception. He had no father, so therefore he had no patrilineal descent from David. Right off the bat, that's it. Furthermore, he went against God's words. If you read the Gospels, you'll see that. He says, well, the Torah says this, but I say that on numerous occasions. Okay. And what your point about that the Messiah having the ability to add or detract, nobody has the ability to add or to detract from the Torah, Marlene. That's something which God says you can't do. There are extenuating circumstances when temporarily a Navi, a prophet, can suspend the law temporarily. But that no way is it a permanent change like Jesus was doing. Okay? All right. All right, let's see. I don't want to miss any questions here. Farzan is saying, what I mean is the recent comments by Rabbi Kaduri and Rav Kanivsky that we are now in the seventh period of Mashiach's arrival. Yeah, the rabbis in the Talmud said they greatly ridiculed anybody who tries to anticipate and to forecast when the Messiah is coming. So these things the rabbis in the Talmud already addressed. All right, so people who want to get up on the grandstand and and make statements that give them great, you know, respect. Oh, that they're talking about big areas. That's one of the emotions that pushes a person to be in a position of authority. And then to retain his popularity, many times he will make big statements. So you keep that in mind. Okay, Chaim is saying, doesn't the Talmud say that a small finger doesn't get hurt without God's involvement? Yes. Yes. Okay, but you have to understand what that means. And I actually once heard a rabbi speak about that, and he was referring to another point in the Talmud that says that if a person even puts his hand in his pocket to pull up one coin, but he pulls up a different coin, so that is like a punishment of sorts. But what that means is it's not like a direct punishment, but that there is the world is built in a certain way where there's a certain amount of frustration built into the physical. That was what God said to Adam, that the thorns and thistles will sprout for you. Because since Adam did not listen, I mean, Adam HaRishon, the first man, didn't listen to God's command, and he took from the fruit the tree of knowledge, which we shouldn't have taken from. So that showed that he was very attached to the physical, and he couldn't listen to the abstract one single law that God gave him. So since he was so involved in the physical, so what God did was he made a change in the physical world that when you try to plant this, well, thorns and thistles are going to pop up. Okay, so that type of a response to man's overindulgence in the physical is a proper response, because what God is saying is that now that man had over-involved himself in the physical, the way that I can correct man is by building some frustration into the physical world. So that means that in our physical world, we're going to see scratches on our new car. We're going to see things rust. We're going to get old physically. Every area that we want to put our physical security in, we're going to find it frustrated because it doesn't give us exactly what we want. We have a fantasy about a vacation, and it ends up raining in a couple of days. All these different things are part of the design of the world. So that's what it means, Chaim, in terms of the small finger doesn't get hurt without God's involvement. Okay. Marlene in Israel is asking, so, since you said we should ask, then I would like to ask a question. Okay, very good, Marlene. Let me see. Why, in the reading of the Siddur in Rosh Hashanah, on the blowing session, the name of Yeshua is mentioned as Sar? Okay, I don't know what you're talking about. You're saying that the Siddur talks about Jesus? I don't have that in mind. I don't know what you're talking about. The blowing of the bowing session? That's news to me. And no, Jesus is not part of our Siddur at all. Okay. Okay, Yaakov has sound. Very good. Yaakov, do me a favor. Yaakov Sauté. Since you just got sound now, do me a favor and just type in what the problem was and how you corrected it, because that just helps us in the future, because somebody else may have the same issue that you had. But if you had an issue that you didn't have the sound and now you've figured out how to resolve it, it would be very helpful to just benefit us with that. So maybe you could just type into the screen, actually just so I could see it quickly, type in how you corrected the error. That would be helpful to us. Okay. Okay, Yaakov is also writing that Jesus was a line of David through Miriam, his mother. But that's not good. It has to be patrilineal. Right? The tribe goes through the father, not through the mother, Yaakov. Okay. Shane is asking, what are the requirements to become a rabbi? A lot of study. And a person with good qualities, good character traits, who's covered main areas of the Torah, and he's really interested in helping out people in terms of teaching. All right, there's more to it, but that's a very big question. Shira in New York. How do we know the origin of the oral law is precisely as it was meant to be? What if the rabbis who wrote it down were... Actually, let me just make one point right now. Since there are a number of questions on the screen, let's hold off on the questions just for a moment, just until I finish up the questions that we have right now. So if everybody could hold off on the questions just until we get through this last list of them, because it looks like there's a number of them here. Okay, appreciate that. Okay, let me get back to Shira's question now. How do we know the origin of the oral law is precisely I guess you mean, how do we know that the oral law now is precisely how it's meant to be, not the origin? What if the rabbis who wrote it down were just smart people that wrote it for the sake of making order in society? You would have the truth then also recorded. You wouldn't be able to have a fabrication of history without the actual history being recorded as well, Shira. So to suggest that the rabbis just wrote it down and claimed that the oral law really came from Sinai, but it didn't. So that means that you would have to have some people supporting that, but you don't see that. You don't see that the leaders of Judaism even had that assumption. That is not something which was mentioned at all. So it is the basic rule I'm answering to you, Shira, is that it is impossible to have mass silence about history. Okay, and again, if you could just hold off on the entries right now, please don't type into the window just until we get past the series of questions that we have right now. Again, that's only for your own good. I don't want to pass up a question here. All right, Shira, so I hope that answers your question. You would not have a unanimous record that we have now of Sinai and how the Torah actually did reach us today, and that would be the exclusive story if that really did not happen. So the only reason why we have that story and it was passed down is because of the reason. Okay. Let me see other questions here. The decision about the settlements is a political one or a religious one? I'm not versed in that area. I can't answer that question, Pega. Jeremiah in Canada has a question. How do I, a Jew, know that heaven is my home when I leave this world? Okay, so you want to know, how do we know that there is a heaven? It seems to be what your question is, Jeremiah. Well, this was something which even the Gentile philosophers also agreed to, that the human being is comprised of two parts, a physical body and a non-physical. That's the part of the body that's, not the part of the body, but it is a component of the human experience that we call the soul. And we see that nothing which is inanimate can perceive thought, for example, a rock, even animals. Anything which is just brute physical creation has no connection with the world of ideas. And the philosophers and the rabbis all realized that there is something called metaphysics. There is a whole world of existence outside of the physical world. There's a world of knowledge. And the only thing which can perceive knowledge is something which is in the same par. Meaning, since a rock cannot perceive knowledge, a rock is brute physical creation, there's no relationship between a rock and abstract thought. So how does a human being have thought? How can a human being perceive wisdom? Which I should rephrase that. So the way that a human being perceives wisdom is only because it has the apparatus. It has a soul. A human being has a soul. There must be something in a person which is not physical. So therefore, if there's a non-physical part to man, and that is what perceives knowledge, that's what perceives ideas. So when a physical body dies, that's a physical occurrence. But that has no effect on the soul. So the soul's existence after life is what we say heaven. That's what we mean to say, Jeremiah. That's how we know that there is existence after life, because the soul does not depend on the physical body. We know a soul must exist, because that is what is necessary in order to perceive ideas. And therefore we know that a tree does not have a soul, that soil doesn't have a soul, that rocks and water do not have souls. The only thing which has a soul is that which can perceive wisdom. And that the only thing on earth that has that capability is a human being. Now, death is a physical occurrence. So when you die, that does not affect the non-physical part of man. So that existence after life is what we refer to as heaven, that existence. And then there's also, like Maimonides talks about in his book, The Guide for the Perplexed, that the body acts as a veil between man and God, or man and the world of ideas, because you're limited to, the soul is limited in its sensing of ideas, because everything we arrive at and sense is limited to the five senses. But that's only when we're alive. But once a person is not alive anymore, the body no longer limits the soul's ability to get ideas. Okay. Tzipalea in New York is asking, if someone wants to move to Israel, but his or her parents forbid it, does that person have a chiyuv to listen? No. You don't have an obligation to listen to your parents in areas that you feel are Torah law. There's a certain area of respecting your parents, but that wouldn't come into the picture. For example, if you wanted to marry a certain person, your parents didn't want you to, you have to live your own life. I mean, in terms of respecting them and honoring them, of course you have to do that, but not to the point of you not having the good that you feel according to a Torah life is what you're looking for. T. Schiff has a question on conservative thoughts on cremation. Is it allowed? No, you're not allowed to. The body is not to be desecrated. It's supposed to be buried, and even an autopsy is not allowed. Okay, Joseph is writing, the whole preemie of Christianity is the divinity of Jesus. If that is the case, of what use is his human genealogy? If he is human, leave it to the New Testament to contradict itself in genealogy. Right. Okay, it's true. There's a lot of contradictions. Okay, Tom Howe, another question. When did the Greeks translate from the Hebrew Scriptures? I don't have that date, Tom. Pega 48. Is the decision about the settlements... Okay, I already mentioned earlier, Pega. I don't have the answer for you. That is not an area that I am versed in. Okay, I don't have all the facts. And again, like I mentioned in terms of what the class is about today, is Jewish philosophy. Now, you're asking more in terms of a halacha, which is Jewish law, meaning the settlements. Okay, I can't answer that question for you now. Sorry. Chaim on the West Side, follow-up question. Okay, Chaim writes, my question was, if God determines that your fingers should be injured, or as you pointed out, you select the wrong key from your pocket, actually the wrong coin from your pocket, Chaim. Okay, how do you reconcile that with your understanding that God did not cause 167,000 people to be killed in the tsunami? I don't see the question. All right, there could be certain things in terms of the physical world that are set up by God when he created the world, that there's going to be a certain frustration built into the world. That's just the way it works. And it's not because of me or somebody else that metal rusts. Metal rusts because God designed metal in the way that it rusts and it decays. Many things decay. All right, so the same way I will have frustration from a car that I buy, and if I want to hold on to it for a long time, I won't be able to because it's eventually going to rust. So that's a frustration, but it's not a punishment to me. That is something which God built into the physical world in order that people shouldn't get overindulgent in the physical. I mean, God designed the physical body too. You eat too much, you have too much sex, you involve yourself in too much physicality, so then a certain amount of pain and a certain amount of disease is going to be a response. That is all part of God's design, that we shouldn't be involved in the physical as an ends. It's a means. A person has a need for a certain amount of sexual intercourse. A person has a need for a certain amount of enjoying certain pleasant fruits or foods or a steak. And this is part of the human nature, but you do it with moderation. So if certain times during the year you find yourself, you overindulge and therefore you suffered somehow, that's not necessarily a punishment to you. That's just the way the world works. But that's a design for the good of steering people away from the physical and redirecting our attention more towards the world of knowledge. That's really where we're going to derive our greatest happiness. So then your question about the 160,000 people killed in tsunami is not it's not commensurate, because that is something which is also part. I mean, that's not... You know, to speak about that, like that's God's will, again, that was what that other rabbi said, who has no authority to be speaking on God's behalf. That's a very arrogant statement. But this could just be the way the laws of nature work, that this had to happen. These plates shift, that's part of the design of the world, and that this year, that's when those plates were going to give way, and this happened before. And again, if people were righteous enough and on a level, I mean, you have to study God's area of justice like you would study biology. biology or chemistry or to become a doctor, it takes like 10 years of intense study before you really have a grasp. And even then, you don't have all the answers. So if studying the physical world takes a decade of intense study before we have an idea about all the wisdom of God breathed into the physical world, certainly an area that's even more abstract than the physical world, the world of God's justice, that we can't just speak off the cuff as if we have all the answers. So we have to come into this very humble, and we have to be, we have to realize that to start making statements, we wouldn't make statements like this in areas of medicine. And we would a rabbi get up today and start talking about medicine without studying it for 10 years? So certainly he can't start talking about something even more advanced like God's justice. All right. Okay, Shane is asking, if you're a good person and study well, is it possible to become a rabbi with a tattoo? Yes, just because you sinned in the past, that doesn't mean that you can't become better in the future. I mean, look at Abraham. He served idols, right? That's worse than getting a tattoo, and yet he became one of the greatest people ever. Marlene is asking, I can tell you for sure from experience there is a continuing after this life. Marlene, no, you can't tell me from experience that there is a continuation after this life, but you can tell me from a philosophy. All right, you can't say that you can tell me from experience that there is a next life. Yaakov is asking this. Yaakov asks, I could never understand why a person is not Jewish unless their mother was Jewish, but Jesus needs to have a father who is the line of David. That's in terms of the tribes, Yaakov. The religion comes from the mother, but which tribe you come from, that comes from the father. All right? So you write further, my father was Jewish, my mother was not born Jewish. I became a bar mitzvah 25 years ago. While an adult, I attend a shul and believe that Judaism is the proper way to worship God. Am I considered Jewish? You would not be considered Jewish, Yaakov, unless you converted. All right, bar mitzvah is not conversion. If your mother was not Jewish, so you are not Jewish unless you convert. Bar mitzvah does not mean that you did the act of conversion. Conversion is, it's not a hard process, but a lot of study is required. That's something, if you want, you can be in touch with me after the class and we can talk more about it. But no, unless you actually convert, so you're not, you don't have the status of being Jewish. That is something which, you have to study, and you a rabbi will ask you to, certain questions just to confirm that your commitment is true. And then you would have circumcision is one act, and then immersion into the mikveh is another act, and you accept upon yourself the laws. So it's a very, it's not a very long process in terms of the actual conversion. Activity itself is done within a half an hour. But in terms of what leads up to it and to have the right knowledge and that you really have a good handle on what Judaism is, that takes a certain amount of study. Okay. Okay, Paul in Ohio. I read that we are not supposed to eat bread that was cooked with dairy in it. That's not true. You can have bread with dairy in it. There's no problem. Even if the package says it's kosher, is this right? What if a person does not eat meat but a couple of times a year? Eating meat a couple of times a year has nothing to do with whether you eat bread with milk in it. You can have, you can get a dairy cake. You can get bread that's made with milk. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, if you're talking about milk and meat being mixed in something, then you can't. That's a separate thing. Then you can't eat milk and meat together. Okay. Marlene, incorrect. Abraham had a very clear, solid philosophy based on proof. So you're not speaking from knowledge here. Okay, Tzipalea is asking, how can the Torah prohibit homosexual relationships? Well, if God is the creator of morality, so then he is the one to determine whether something is permissible or whether it's not. It's not up to man to say that this is a good morality or not. Man came onto the scene at God's will. God created man. God gave a system and said that killing is okay in this situation, but it's not okay in that situation. And there's many rules and ramifications. God also said that in terms of what your purpose here, in terms of marriage, is for procreation. And to be involved in a relationship where you're just satisfying yourself sexually without the goal of procreating, that is not something God tolerates. And that's why homosexuality is prohibited. Okay, that is why the Torah prohibits homosexual relationships. All right. Okay, Nancy and Eliex. Okay. The Jewish priests were to prepare for the Messiah. What were the reasons they did not think that Jesus was the prophesied Messiah? We answered before, Nancy, that he did not fulfill any of the requirements in order to be determined Messiah. All right? All right, the Maimonides talks about this. If you want to look up what the exact requirements are, you could get Maimonides' book called the Mishnah Torah, or the Yad Chazakah. But it's most commonly, I guess, referred to as the Mishnah Torah by Maimonides. And look in the area, the Laws of Kings. I believe it's the 11th chapter where he discusses what exactly is required in order to determine that somebody is the Messiah. Okay, Jeremiah in Canada is asking, I asked, how do I, a Jew, know that my home will be in heaven when I have to leave this world? The answer was unsatisfactory. I know that only God can say if heaven is my home, but that is not an answer to my question. Surely you understand that. I'm not sure what you mean, only God can tell you if heaven is your home. I mean, reality tells us, I mean, again, all the philosophers, Jew and non-Jew philosophers alike, realize that there is something in the human experience that is not physical that can perceive ideas. And when the person's body dies a physical death, that has no effect on this non-physical part, his soul. So that existence after the body is gone is involved, is a state where just the soul of the person exists. And that's what we refer to as heaven. So it's not that only God can say if there's a heaven, but even the person's reason can tell you this. Okay, Yaakov, you're writing that you were circumcised 8 days after birth by your father's wish. That may be true, but you would still have to go through a conversion now if you never did a conversion before. All right, and you'd also, they would have to take some blood from your organ in order to, even though the circumcision was done, they would still take one drop of blood. That's the Jewish law. Okay. All right, truth, Marlene is writing that Judaism or Abraham had a system of truth with faith. True. But make sure you understand where faith comes in and where truth comes in. In terms of a person having the correct concepts, primarily that God exists and that how he operates and how his justice works, that has to be based on reason, right? That's why God gave us intelligence. We have intelligence, and though we use it in the most important area of our lives, and that's our religion. Okay? So we're not just to simply believe that God exists and believe that, you know, how the world works. We have reasoning. So we analyze and we ask questions. And that was the whole debate that Abraham had with God when God was about to destroy Sodom. And he asked, if there's 50 righteous people, will you destroy? If there's 45 righteous people, will you destroy Sodom? If there's 40, 30, 20, 10, that whole discussion, was there were deep ideas that Abraham was learning from God. But those were ideas. It wasn't faith. He was analyzing. And when Moses was sent on the mission to take the Jews out of Egypt, he had a whole debate with God for 7 days in terms of understanding by what merit did the Jews deserve to come out. He had to understand his mission well in order that he would be the proper person to take them out. Okay. Okay, that looks like we have the questions up to this point. So now if there's any more questions, you can feel free to type them in. And again, please be succinct, you know, try to be brief, but, you know, to the point of your question. Okay, Paul in Oregon is writing, are Jews allowed to be, I'm not sure why that word was knocked out over there, what about bindles, amulets, and charms? Are they allowed? They seem to be more and more commonplace today. If you mean, if Paul, if you're asking about Let's see. I think what you're asking, Paul, is whether Jews are allowed to be superstitious. No, that is not. That is against Judaism. Red bendels are completely prohibited. Those red strings that even religious, so-called religious Jews wear, I mean, they're ridiculous. And the greatest argument against the red bendels is not only that the Talmud brings down that they're prohibited, and certain amulets were okay, but you have to understand what they were doing. Certain amulets, either amulets were made out of certain vegetation, or they had certain writing. Now, the vegetation amulets, they had a certain medicinal effect. And the amulets that they used to have back then where a person would write something on it, certain ideas. So if a person was ill or didn't feel good psychologically, he'd look at the amulet, he'd read what it says on there. It reminded him of true ideas that made him feel good. So that was okay. But there's no power to these things. Nobody would say that a piece of parchment with ink on it has power. Nobody would say that a root from a certain vegetable has a power. There's no powers that exist in the world. God is the only source of any type of power. Whatever God created a rock to have the abilities for, that's it. All a rock can do is sit and be dormant, and it has a slow rate of decay, it has a certain mass, it has a certain color, it has a certain density. But that's it. The same thing with the human body. We have certain muscular power, but we also have a certain rate that we decay, we get older. We don't have the ability to sense things except through our five senses. That's why this whole concept of mind reading and psychics is ridiculous. All right? All these things are prohibited. Even though they may be commonplace, Paul, this is for Paul in Oregon. Even though you may see Jews and there may be rabbis and they may have beards, and not that a beard means anything, but you may look at this person as being, oh, he's got a beard, this makes him a distinct, pious individual. That's completely false. You look at what God wrote in the Torah, and you look at the ideas, and you see how this does not make sense what people do. But people are insecure. People are, whether they're Jewish or not, insecurity is something which many people give into. All right. All right, let's see the next question. Okay, Tzipalea is suggesting, why is it that the Torah seems to be a bit sexist towards women? Well, you'd have to substantiate that. I don't see the Torah being sexist towards women. I don't know what you're referring to. If you want to know why there's a separation in the temple, that's for both people, that they are concentrating on their prayers. It used to be, actually, in the times of the Talmud, that the women would be invited to actually read the Torah for the congregation. The reason why the rabbis put an end to that is because they saw that the men were slacking off and they didn't fulfill their obligation, because it's really the man's obligation to be studying and teaching Torah. That's the role of the man in Jewish society. The role of the woman has a very important role in terms of nurturing children and raising sons and daughters in the way that they are the best psychologically and happy in order that they can live. I mean, there's two parts to a human being. There's a psychological part and there's intelligence. Both have to be addressed. Man addresses the intelligence part in terms of studying and teaching, and the women are addressing the very important part, the psychological part of man. But you'll have to give me examples of what you mean. All right, Nancy in LEX is asking, I'm not sure why God allowed Abraham, Jacob, Nahor, etc. to have their wives, handmaidens, in addition to their wife. Was it to ensure the line? I actually heard a rabbi talk once, and he said that none of the patriarchs ever took a second wife without permission from their wife, and it wasn't even their doing. Meaning Abraham did not desire anybody but Sarah, but when Sarah saw that she was barren, she approached Abraham and says, take Hagar and have intercourse with her, and perhaps I will be built up through her. So that was Sarah's own decision. Isaac didn't have a second wife. Jacob was only going to marry Rachel, but he was duped by Laban, his father-in-law, who tricked him. So he ended up having Leah first, and then he ended up marrying Rachel. And then Rachel and Leah themselves approached Jacob and said, take my handmaid, when both of them became barren, so when they left off from having children. So it was not Jacob's decision. I'm not sure you're talking about the Leon regarding whether you're allowed to make bread that has milk in it. I never heard any reason why you can't. I may be wrong. I never heard a reason. Okay. Paul in Oregon is asking, isn't red bendels part of Kabbalah? No, red bendels are completely prohibited by Torah. If people today want to say that they have Kabbalah, first of all, they're violating Maimonides' words. Maimonides says we don't have Kabbalah today because the line, the chain of the tradition was broken. And again, don't think Kabbalah is a magical thing. Kabbalah, which simply the word in Hebrew means what was received, meaning the oral Torah ideas that were received from one rabbi to another rabbi down the line. But that chain was broken back to Moses. Nobody alive today has a lineage back to Moses that he received, that his knowledge is from him. So we don't have that reception today. Kabbalah can be easily translated as the traditions, the oral communications. But we don't have that today. But nothing, there was no such thing as powers or black magic or nothing. Evil eye, all these things you have to understand. What the rabbis talk about, like, for example, an evil eye. That means to say, for example, when, you know, when Jacob sent his 10 sons down to Egypt, he told them, don't go, all of you, through a single gate when you get to the country of Egypt, because that's going to cause the Egyptians to cast aspersions upon you. They're going to look at you suspiciously. I mean, imagine today 10 Arabs walking through Tel Aviv airport. That will raise some eyebrows. And then people start trumping up charges. So Jacob said the same thing to his sons. You guys look different than the Egyptians. So when you go into the Egyptian gate, go each one of you through your own gate. So this way there's not a focal point of 10. And they were tall. They were very formidable looking individuals, the sons of Jacob. So Jacob didn't want them to be subject to any undue suspicion. So he told them, in other words, don't let people's evil eye of suspicion be cast upon you. But not that there's any power called an evil eye. All right? Okay. Next question. What is evil eye? Okay, Paul answered that. Paul in Ohio. I'm not sure what your question is. Which question is it? Maybe you want to type it in again. Oh, you're saying that you found on a website it is forbidden to make milchig bread, dairy bread. It is forbidden to make it. Okay, it could be that I'm making a mistake on that. I did not hear of that. Okay. If you want, Paul, in Ohio, why don't you send an email through the website here. This way I'll have it and I can respond to you directly. I'll look up the Gemara in Psachim, the Talmud in Psachim 38. I'll look it up. Okay. Marlene is saying, you're talking to Jeremiah, okay? You're not talking to me. And Tzipale is asking, why is it the man's role to learn Torah, and why is it the woman's to take care of the children? Why is it the woman's role to take part of the children? Well, if it was the opposite, you'd have the same question, Tzipa. Let's say man would be the one to get pregnant, and he would be raising the children, and the woman was the one that was commanded and study. You'd still have the same question. So this type of a question is not going to... this is God's will. He designed that there should be a certain personality type that is the one that's involved in study and teaching over. But that doesn't mean that the woman shouldn't study. A woman has to know all the laws that she keeps too. So she must know the basic ideas. She has to have the philosophy. She has to, and a woman has the same ability for perfection as a man. There's no such idea that the man has a better shot at perfection because he studies. A woman has to study too. Okay. Let's see. Next question is... I don't have the, okay, Shana, I don't have the verse in front of me. It says the exact wording that prohibits homosexuality, but I believe somebody typed it earlier. All right, yes, somebody typed it. It's in Leviticus 20, verse 13, so you could take a look there. Okay, Yom Tov is writing, I tried to read a book on Kabbalah, but it was very confusing. What is it about in a nutshell? Again, we don't have Kabbalah today, Yom Tov. So it's not something that we have to us. It's not available. It was not something which was passed down successfully. And what people claim today is Kabbalah can't be because it's written, and Kabbalah is not allowed to be written. And again, for the third time, Maimonides says that the chain of the oral traditions back to Moses have been broken, so we don't have all of the transmissions. But if you look at what the rabbis in the Talmud were studying, what preoccupied their time? They were studying the laws and the verses of the Torah and understanding the basic concepts and the tenets of Judaism. You don't see that they're involved in all this red bindle and all this foolish practice. That's something which people today have grabbed onto because people have weak minds today and they're looking for a quick fix, and therefore they think if they're evil, but if they wear a red string on their hand, somehow now God won't punish them. I mean, that's a ridiculous idea. Okay, Paul, my pleasure. I'm glad I was able to answer your question. Sipo Leah, you're asking, do the expressions of Baruch Hashem, Beli Ayin Hara, Em Yirtza Hashem, Be'ezras Hashem, all that, have any effect on our daily lives? No. I mean, first of all, Ayin Hara, the way people believe it today, they think that other people have like this hocus-pocus thing where they can cast an evil eye on somebody. I mean, it's like, you know, a person when they're a child, they won't say that they have a power of the evil eye. When they get older, somehow, this person is supposedly has the power of the evil eye. Oh, well, what did he do? Did he go to evil eye school? I mean, as you think about it, it's nonsense. People believe in nonsense. All right? A person could definitely say, you know, Baruch Hashem, you know, blessed be Hashem, that I have a good life. That's nice. But there's no effect or powers or anything. Shira in New York is asking, I heard that it is halachically permissible for women to wear pants made for women. Is it true? Yes, I heard that view. Actually, I spoke to a top rabbi, and there is a dispute on that, but there is one view that as long as they're made for women and they're not men's clothing, so there's no cross-dressing issues. Second of all, they have to be modest. They have to be very modest. They can't be like, you know, tight pants. But if it's women's clothing and they're modest and they're not a snug fit, like sweatpants, things of that nature, that would be fine, according to that view. Okay, Bill in Texas. Bill in Texas is saying, I disregard about the Trinity. Let me see what you mean. Genesis 1, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. Fine. The word God is Elohim, which is itself a plural form, and like most other words, has more than one definition. It is used in a plural sense of gods or men with authority. That's not true. All right, men of authority, yes. Okay. Okay. So you want to be, it seems to be what Bill, you're saying in Texas, you're trying to give support for the Trinity by saying that the word God in Hebrew is called Elohim, which is plural. But the point is that, again, you have to understand what that means. And certainly if God himself says, Hear, O Israel, I am God, I am one. So God himself says he is one. So how are you going to go against that? That you can't go against that. God himself is saying he's one. And the greatest minds showed how it's impossible for God to be more than one. Robert in Seattle. Hey, Robert, how are you? Nice to see you. Ask Madonna about Kabbalah. Okay, she is an expert. Yep, she probably knows all about it. Okay. Okay, Shoshana, you want a source for what? Okay, just retype again, Shoshana, what you're looking for a source. Okay. Pega 48 is writing. Second. Okay, let me see what Peg is writing. Even after 7 years of working for Rachel, how could he possibly not realize that it is not her he is spending the night with? Because even though Jacob was working 7 years for Rachel, he was not like a person today, you know, the Hollywood fantasy, and a guy is spending all his time with his fiance. That is not what he was involved in. He was a philosopher. He was involved in thought. He was a shepherd that gave him plenty of time to think. Okay, Now, in terms of why he didn't know that it was Rachel, evidently he didn't spend that much time with her to really see the distinction between the two over that 7 years. That shows you something. That should force you to think further into how Jacob spent his time. Okay. Okay, I'll get a source for you. Shoshana, if you want, just send me an email through the website, and I'll get a hold of a source and email it to you. Okay, Pega, I hope that answers your question. He was not found to be around Rachel's side for 7 years. Evidently, he spent very little time. He saw her as a great person and a good person to be the wife and the mother of the tribes that he knew that he was about to have. Now, Marlene in Israel, I'm not sure what you mean about being denied access. Maybe you have a problem with your browser. Okay, Shira in New York is asking, why do women need to cover their hair after marriage? That is done, as a rabbi once explained, in order to demonstrate that they're not in the same state of life anymore as they were before when they were trying to, you know, be attractive and to lure a suitable mate. And once they're married, they have to show that now when they go out, and it's only when they're outside in public. So they have to demonstrate that they're not in that state of mind anymore where they're out to be beautiful, to attract people. Now they show a certain act of modesty. So they cover that part of the body which gives beauty. The hair is the one thing which gives the beauty. It makes a person look disheveled or make the person look very attractive. And also hair has motion to it, so it's a very attractive thing. Every other part of the body is stationary, it's solid. Hair is something which moves with the wind, it moves with motion, so it has that design for a reason. But after marriage, that purpose is no longer there. Okay. Nancy is writing, it seems that some Jews and some Christians are always looking for something other than God. Is it just that some want to rely on themselves rather than putting their lives in God's hands? Could be very many reasons for that, Nancy. But a person's rational will come to the understanding that the world requires a creator. It's impossible that the world made itself. And there had to be one supremely powerful entity that created everything. But if a person wants to abandon the obligations that Torah puts upon him, I mean, there's many different reasons why a person will look for something other than God. MF in Florida is saying, while there is definitely obedience required of God, as is becoming of children of a God of light and goodness, I'm not sure you're talking to me here. Okay, Pega is asking, how could Jacob not recognize that it was Leah who was switched? Because he saw her, he fell in love with her, and he worked so hard to get her. That may be true, but again, if he didn't spend that much time with her during those 7 years, so when he finally was together with her for the first time, and he didn't see so much distinction. Evidently, there wasn't so much talking going on either. It was a very modest and type of a relationship. And you see that, to really clue you in, that there's a very different type of relationship that those patriarchs and matriarchs had than we have today. No, Yaakov, Jacob was not drunk when he got married. He was very much himself. Okay, and sometimes there may be certain glitches on the system here. It may just be in terms of internet connection. Sometimes you'll be broken off from this class, but there's no bouncing feature that's built into this program that we have here on the Misora website. So I can't really say I apologize, because it's nothing that we're doing here. There are intermittent breaks in the internet connection, and what happens is that can cut off the session that we're having here, and you may see an alert on your screen. If that happens, just log in again. You'll see in the top left-hand part of your screen the live classes link. You click, you log in again, you'll be fine. I mean, that happened to me as well here 3 times during this session already. I've been knocked off myself. But that's just another example of what we talked about earlier, that the physical world is not perfect, and that's by design, that we don't overindulge in the physical. So even a website is not going to work perfectly. So it happens to us all. Okay, Joseph is saying that Judaism is based on the provable. Just because I believe that the moon is made of cheese doesn't make it so. Okay, good point. MF in Florida, here's my question. Can Jews ever feel they can welcome Christians without Jesus' agendas as brothers in the land? Yeah, certainly. Especially as the world and UN Nazi pressure and anti-Semitism increase, squeezing the people and the land. Yeah, I mean, in terms of a non-Jew living in Israel is no problem. Certainly, if the person's a non-Jew, is living by the seven Noahide laws. That's what he's supposed to do. So, of course, we accept. I mean, again, like I said earlier, God didn't just create... He didn't create the world just for there to be Jews. God created the world with people. Later on, he distinguished between a Jew and non-Jew just so there would be identified people that have his Torah, his one divine system for mankind, and would teach. Okay. Okay, somebody wants to know the name of the rabbi who's speaking. Okay, my name is Moshe Ben Chaim, Rabbi Moshe Ben Chaim. Okay, Chaim. And next question. Arye Leib is asking, how was it that Joseph married a Jew? Joseph didn't marry a Jew, Arye Leib. Joseph married an Egyptian. I guess you mean, how come Joseph married a non-Jew? Well, Joseph himself wasn't Jewish. There was no such thing as quote-unquote Jews before the Torah was given, Arye Leib. There was no problem. All right. Everybody was basically descendants of Noah. All right. There were different nations. There was so on and so forth. The Tower of Babel. Their people were altered in terms of the language, probably their appearance too, because we see such a diverse amount of types. But there was no reason for one person not to marry another person back then. There was no Torah. There was no system that imposed who you could marry. There were certain laws. There were seven Noahide laws. Shira in New York is asking, how do we know that women need to cover their hair after marriage? Okay, that's the law that's in the Shulchan Aruch. Don't have the exact section in front of me, but that, if you, again, you would like to write me as an email, I'll respond to you. Okay, Tzipa Leah wants to know, did Jacob love Leah? It seems to be he did, but it still seems to be that there was a greater attachment to Rachel. Okay. Okay, let's see the next question. Okay, Wes Miller is offering to Pega a good answer. So, Pega, you can take a look at what Wes is writing regarding why Jacob didn't really notice that it was Leah right away. How come he was fooled? Okay, MF. Okay, you're talking to Joseph. Okay, it looks like we've covered all the questions up to this point. Okay, Shira, you're asking how to send an email. If you look on the left-hand side of your screen, there's a list of about 20 white links. At the bottom of that list, you'll see an envelope. Just click on that envelope, that email icon, and send it to that address. Okay. Okay, Tzipale is asking, who was the first Jew? I thought Abraham, but he came before the Torah was given. That's correct. Again, Judaism was when God gave the system of the Torah at Sinai. So those people, those 2.5 million people, were all the first Jews. Those were now the ones that took it upon themselves and accepted the Torah system. So there wasn't a first individual. It was that group of people, that generation. Okay, Shira, my pleasure. Okay, but prior to Sinai, there was no system except for the seven Noahide laws. So there was no problem. So I hope that answers your question, Arye Leib, that there was no problem with Joseph marrying the one of the Egyptian women. Marlene in Israel is writing that Abraham was a Hebrew. Yes, but Hebrew comes from the Hebrew word Ivri. Ivri is translated as Hebrew. Hebrew is not a religion. Ivri means... a couple of different explanations the rabbis give. What does it mean that Abraham is called Avraham or Ivri? Because the letter V is can also be swapped with the letter B as in boy. So V as in Victor can be swapped for B. So Ivri, it is also the same thing as Hebrew, the same letter. So Abraham, the Hebrew, really in the Torah's language is Avraham or Ivri. Now, Ivri could mean one of two things, at least. Ivri means from the word Aver, Hanari, the other side of the river, meaning Abraham was from the other side. He wasn't following the theology of the idolaters. So they called him Abraham, the other side. He was from the other side, the other view. Ivri also means Aver Acher. I mean, he was like from a different, also a similar idea, that he was like from a different strand. He was not of the same fabric of the rest of the people that, of the world. Okay. Jews are the Hebrews who accepted the Torah. Okay. DeLeon is saying then Moshe would be the first Jew. Well, Moshe and the entire nation, because they all accepted the Torah at Sinai together. No, we would not say Shira in New York. We would not say that Abraham was the first Jew. We would say that he was the founder of Judaism. But in terms of technically when the laws came into effect, that was at Sinai. But Abraham had the perfections of the Torah. That's why the rabbis sometimes talk about Abraham as having been eating matzahs on Passover. I mean, how could Abraham eat a matzah on Passover when Passover didn't take place yet? There was no such thing as the Exodus yet, so there was no such concept as Passover. So how could Abraham celebrate an event that never took place? So it means something else. It means that he was, as a rabbi was explained, it means that he partook of the same perfections as those Jews who celebrate Passover. Okay. All right. MF in Florida. That's a appreciate the comment. Exactly where the word Jew from Judah. Okay. Let's take a look at Stephen. Yosef was not bound by Torah, meaning he didn't have to marry a Jew or non-Jew. Likewise, Rachel had to die before entering Eretz Canaan. Right, there's a Ramban that says that, Stephen, right? The rabbis say that the Avos kept the Torah in Canaan, but were not so bound in Chutz La'aretz. Correct, that's the Ramban. Jack is saying, by many historical accounts, the high priests of the temples were corrupt and despised. Was this true? If you'd like to quote the source, I believe that is that they were corrupt. They were corrupt, for sure. I mean, there were instances where, you know, people of all walks of life, it doesn't matter that it became, I mean, we hoped that the priests would be the leaders and set examples, but no, they fell prey to wrong ideas too. Even the great kings, they were kings of the Jews, even higher than the priests. I mean, the kings were corrupt, and they were involved in idolatry. Okay. Shira is asking, well, if Abraham predated Egypt, how did he know about all the perfections? Well, a person could know about what's perfect in life by using their mind. That's just how Abraham knew. Without anybody teaching him, he knew that idolatry was false. He was able to think and study, and for almost 40 years, Abraham was involved in pondering the universe, and there's a tremendous amount of wisdom that a person can arrive at. I mean, look at an Aristotle, look at an Abraham, look at an Einstein. Just with their mind alone, they could ponder the universe and develop volumes and volumes of knowledge in area. That's how he knew what God really wanted, by studying the universe. So it's an amazing thing, and we are not so involved in doing this. So that's why it's like, how could he know about things without a book? Well, because the human mind is capable of penetrating and uncovering more and more ideas. And it's very rare that you'll have somebody like an Abraham. That's why God helped us and gave us the Torah system, because that's a shorter cut in order to get to the true ideas that God wants man to have. But it's not impossible for man to uncover the great wisdom that's out there just using his mind. So he was able to arrive, Shira, at Abraham was able to arrive at his perfections by using his knowledge and analysis and deduction. I mean, I'll give you an example. Abraham would see that there are so many people in the world, so he realized, after he came to the truth that there must be one God, and this God is not a rock, it's not a stone, it's not a tree that's carved into an idol, this can't be, because these things need to be created too. So once Abraham came to the realization that there is one cause of the whole physical world, he himself not being physical, then he started thinking further, well, what does this God want? what is his plan by putting man here? Well, Abraham saw that God made many individuals. Oh, it must be that God wants each one of these individuals to all be involved in knowledge. So then Abraham learned about the concept of equality. And that's just one example of how Abraham was able to uncover truths and able to arrive at ideas. Okay. Tzipalea is asking, why are women forbidden in singing? Well, it could be that, and why are men, because she wants to say, men are able to attract a woman through his voice as well. So why shouldn't men be prohibited to sing publicly? Good question. I can't give you an exact answer what the halacha is, but I would suggest that a woman's voice is definitely more alluring, just like a woman's hair is more alluring to a man than opposite. Plus, a man is attracted more to the physicality and the form and the voice of a woman, whereas a woman's attraction to a man is not rooted in the physical, but it's rooted more in terms of the image, the caretaker, that he's a strong image. So those are not things psychologically that appeal to the woman as much as a woman's physical features appeal to a man. I would say that the answer would be along those lines. Okay. Okay, it looks like the rest are just conversations. We're just looking at the screen. It looks like the rest of you are just having conversations among yourself, which is fine. All right, let's see. MF in Florida has a question. Can Jews ever feel they can welcome Christians without... yes, I answered that. You asked earlier, and I answered you. But let me just read it again. Can Jews ever feel that they can welcome Christians without Jesus' agendas, meaning, I guess, Noahide Gentiles, as brothers in the land? Of course. All right. I mean, we are to be teaching them. So if a Jew is living in Israel and a Gentile is keeping the seven Noahide laws and he wants to live near the Jews so he can learn more, by all means, we accept him. Okay. All right, looks like we answered the questions up to this point. If there's any questions I skipped, feel free to type them in again. All right, and just in terms of the whole thing, I see there's a whole conversation going on regarding Jesus and so on and so forth. I mean, it should be simple to all of us that the whole fallacy, number one, the conflicting gospels regarding Jesus. Number two, that it wasn't written down until 70, 100, whatever. How many numerous decades later, then they want to sit down and start writing stories about Jesus that are all in conflict with each other, making up history as they're going along. I mean, if there was any real miracles that took place that Jesus did, so then those, like for example, it says in Matthew, I think, somebody asked me this week, it says that Jesus fed 5,000 people with just a loaf of bread and one or two fish. Oh, great miracle. Well, listen, I could write a story today also, and I could start talking about people in the past, and either you'll believe me or you won't, but that's no proof. Just because you have a written account that says that somebody did something in front of people, there's no proof, because it wasn't passed down. If that really took place, so those 5,000 people would have passed it down, and there would not have been any break in the story. But you don't have that. You have decades and decades of silence. You know why you have decades and decades of silence in the New Testament? Because it didn't happen. They made up these stories to deify this guy Jesus, who went against God's word by his own statements, and did not fill any of the requirements at all of being the Messiah. I mean, and he went against the teachings of the rabbis, and you'll see that all the rabbis disagree with him. So it's an open and shut case. That just because there are so many millions of Christians that outnumber the Jews today, that doesn't make their history true. And if that's what you want to say, that numbers wins, so then all the Christians should convert to become Islamic, because there's more Muslims than there are Christians. So you don't use numbers as a proof. Also, you don't just say because it's written in a book somewhere, that makes it true. You have to have the testimony of the people, an unbroken history. That's the only way we prove history is true. You have to have witnesses, and you have to have an unbroken chain of transmission. If all of a sudden you find that 100 years after some so-called event, they're saying that Jesus did all this stuff, well, who were these people? And where? How come they didn't continue talking about it afterwards? Why is there complete silence? There's a very simple reason why there's complete silence. It's because it didn't take place. All right? Okay, let's see the questions we have now. Okay, Paul in Oregon. Is it permissible to call a shul a temple even though there is only one temple? I don't see any reason why you can't call it what you want. Marlene. Let's see. It's saying... you're speaking to somebody else there, okay. Shira, how did Abraham know about the details of the perfections? No, he didn't, Shira. He didn't know about Pesach and Matzah. That's just a metaphor. The metaphor that the rabbi said was just to indicate something to you. Okay. Joseph in New Jersey is asking, what place do Mikubalim, Kabbalists, take today in Judaism? I am still very turned off by the Dybbuk fiasco a few years ago, which was a fraud, and none of the 200 Mikubalim were there apologized. Yeah, I know, there's a lot of people today that claim to be palm readers and all these things in the name of Judaism, but they're all phonies. They're all facades. They're all liars. All these things, people claim to have all these powers, not one of them can win the lottery. I mean, that should strike you as being very curious. They need to charge you $5 a session, and they know the future, but they can't even win one single lottery. I mean, something should, you know, be, you know, rearing its ugly head over there. It shows you that it's a real fake. I know there's a lot of people that go, and people are very insecure, and they have needs, and they get sick in life, and they run to every single thing. They resort to every possibility that they think in their mind is going to help them. But this is all against the Torah. There's no power except for God. And for people to claim that they die and they came back, and for people to say that they could create man out of dirt, this Dybbuk story, and people to say that they have powers is completely against the Torah. And if people are taking the metaphors of the rabbis literal, they're disagreeing with Maimonides and all the greats who said that the rabbis wrote in metaphors. So you have to not take these stories literally. There's ideas behind them. But everything's based on reason. The whole Torah is based on reason. That's why God gave us intelligence. And if a person doesn't use reason and intelligence in his life, he's not living a real Torah life. I know somebody who went to one of the biggest rabbis, and her sister had cancer. And she asked the rabbi, where my sister live? So the rabbi said, yes. So this rabbi gave false hopes to the sister, and later on, the sister died. So, I mean, you don't need to have examples, but he was a phony also, a fake, a fraud. And it's a real shame that it gives a bad name to Judaism that there are people like this. Okay, next question. Judy is asking, weren't Jews commanded to rid the land of the uncircumcised? Yeah, you'll have to give me a quote on that. I don't know if that forces you to force... A person has an obligation to circumcise himself. If he doesn't have one, he's got to do it. Does that mean that he can't stay in the land of Israel? I don't know. It could be. I don't know the area. Nancy is asking, what can Christians do to help the state of Israel? This conversation is very enlightening to a Christian. Great answers, although I don't understand a lot of it. All right, well, Nancy, in Lexington, I guess, feel free to write, you know, you can write me directly at the website if you have any questions. But in terms of what Christians could do to support the state of Israel, I'm sure there's many things you could look into. In terms of, so the best thing is really to support Torah education, because that is at the core of everything. Without education, a person does not know what to do in terms of his life. So you need to have Torah education before you can have any other type of understanding of how you support Torah. You know, support for Judaism in Israel has to be based on God's system of Torah. Okay. Stephen Edgware is saying, how comprehensible was the Torah to Bnei Israel at the time of Matan Torah? It was completely comprehensible. They understood exactly what Moses was teaching them. And that's why it says that he would stand from day until night answering the questions that the Jews had, because anything that they weren't clear about, they would ask Moses. Okay, now, I see there are a lot of questions on the screen right now. Let me just, it keeps on scrolling. I just want to get to where we are. Second. Sipalea is asking, how do we know the Navi really happened? Meaning, how do we know the stories of the prophets really happened? Someone may have just recorded it down and it happened, or just made it up. Well, that goes on for any history. We know that the history of the Torah is accurate because it was passed down unanimously, and there was no break in the story. That's how we know. Okay. Paul is asking, if a Jew converts to a Christianity, is he still considered a Jew? Is he idolatrous? Yes, he's idolatrous. That's what he is at that point. If he starts bowing down to idols of Jesus and starts to believe that God is a Trinity, then that's it. He has no share in the world to come. He has a complete wrong idea of God, and therefore there can't be any share that he has in the world to come. Okay, at this point, I see there are a lot of questions and a lot more coming on screen. So what I have to do is ask everybody to please cease from typing anything into the window. Let's just get through this round of questions here before we type in more, because I'm afraid that I'll be missing questions. So please, everybody, hold off on typing anything into the window right now. Okay. Let me just see where we are up to. Okay. All right, MF in Florida. A Jew is not a question on Judaism. I mean, a person wants to use the word Jew any way he wants. That's up to him. Baruch in Massachusetts is asking, why is it considered better to be machmir? It's better to be machmir, to be stringent on Torah law, if you understand it to be a perfection. Just to try to be more strict on things when you don't know what you're doing, you're not following intelligence. In areas where you're doubtful, also, you have to be machmir. Like for Torah areas, if you don't know, if you're in doubt about something, so we say you should be more strict, meaning play it safe. Okay. Stella is asking, is not a prophet known by the works of the power of the Holy Spirit and the word they spoke like also Moshe? A prophet, we know who the prophets are, Stella. It's all written down. Marlene in Israel is asking, why to believe in the rabbi from Lubavitch that is dead today? You're not supposed to believe in people that are dead. You're supposed to believe in people that are alive. I mean, belief, in a person is not a Jewish concept. You don't believe in people. You follow rational ideas. You follow the Torah. All right, so we do not believe in any people that are claimed to be power workers or Kabbalists or these people that in Lubavitch that think that the dead Rebbe is coming back to life any more than anybody else. When God wants to resurrect the dead, he'll do it. But to say that somebody who's dead is the Messiah, he's dead. So you can't be the Messiah when you're dead. So we don't look at the false ideas of Jews any different than the false ideas of non-Jews. All right? So your question, Marlene, we don't distinguish. If a person has a wrong idea about a dead rabbi, he has a wrong idea. We don't deify man. All right? When Moses died, the people didn't start saying Moses is coming back from the dead. When Moses died, the people accepted he is dead. And they moved on, and Joshua became the next leader. There wasn't any of this nonsense. But you see that the whole concept of Jesus coming back stems from a human emotion, and Jews have the same human psyche as non-Jews. So that's why you have many Jews that have the same Jesus emotion as Gentiles. Right? A Jew is not incubated from making any of the same errors that a non-Jew is. Like I said, we're made exactly the same. All right. that it has to be clear. God did not make Jew and non-Jew. He didn't create two types of human beings. Again, please hold off on any typing at this point just till we get through this series of questions. And then, once we are, then we'll take one more round of questions. Okay. MF in Florida is saying, to keep it simple, Jews and Christians are brothers. They should work together, learn to trust one another, and need not convert anyone. Hashem is the one that touches hearts. Until then, let's band together. True, we should teach the Christians about the fallacy of their wrong ideas, though. We should show them how their religion is a created, man-made system. And prior to that, the religion was Judaism. That was the only proven religion given by God, mass revelation. That's why God created mass revelation. Okay. I don't know who Rabbi Basri is, Joseph, in New Jersey. But anybody who fits the bill, who does false things and goes against the Torah, is a fraud. Shira in New York is saying, can you please re-explain more about the previous question regarding Abraham and him knowing about the details of the perfections? All right, Shira, that'll be a little bit more long-winded. Let me just... well, there's actually an article on the site, Shira, how Abraham studied, I think, how Abraham studied God, I think, might be the title. Well, Abraham learning of God or in God's justice. Abraham learning God's justice. That's the name of the title. Okay. All right. Okay, Tzipalea. Again, Shira, if you want, please email me directly. Okay, Tzipalea. Please, again, I'm asking you, please don't type on the screen right now because I'm trying to read the questions, and when you type, it pushes up the text. So if you could all hold off on typing on the screen right now, please hold off. Thank you. Okay. I'm just doing it because I don't want to miss any of your questions. Okay, Tzipalea is saying, if rabbis have no special power, why then do people go to them for bracha? The brachas don't help. You're right, Tzipalea. You should not be going to a rabbi for bracha. If you want, if a person's having a tough time in life or so on and so forth, what they should do is look at themselves and see where they're making mistakes. That's what the Talmud says. Or you can go to a wise individual that can analyze your personality and point out things about you. But if you're, you know, if God is giving a person certain trials and tribulations in life, going to a rabbi to get a blessing is not going to interfere with God's will. A rabbi is not going to be able to control God, all right? So to get a bracha, like to get a shield against something negative, so that doesn't make any sense. So there's this concept about going to a rabbi to get a blessing to change your current fate is foolish. What you should do to change your current fate is to look and see how you can improve your life. It could just be intellectual errors that you're making. You could be messing up in business, and that's why you're poor. It could be eating the wrong things and you're not exercising, that's why you're sick. It could be a physical thing. You need an operation, and that's why you're not having children. Those have to be examined, and then your own acts of, if a person is not living properly and a person sins, so that could be something which God will remove himself from the person, and then they're going to be up to fate of nature. Just like the people in tsunami. They were not deserving of God to step in, so they were subject to the laws of nature. It's not that God made the tsunami and killed them. It's that the world was constructed in a way that this had to happen at this time because of the pressures of the plates, the tectonic plates, and they shifted, and this was the time for them to shift. And unfortunately, you know, people got affected, but if they were on the level, God could very well step in. Okay. I answered your question, Marlene. Okay. Tomer in New York, what about the Mukubalam, meaning the Kabbalists? And again, please hold off on doing any typing right now, just so we can keep all the questions on screen. Thank you. Okay, Tomer's question. All right, so I'm going to go to Tomer, and then we'll finish off with Joseph in New Jersey. Looks like the last I see on screen right now. Okay, so Tomer's question is, what about the Kabbalists that know many things about you when they see you for the first time? They don't. These people who say things about you are saying generalities. I guarantee you that if you ask anybody, well, what did they say about you, they'll basically say, you know, if you hear exactly what they say, they're just generalities that can apply to almost anybody. But since people are coming to these Kabbalists with a big need, so anything the Kabbalist says, they'll latch on to. Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. They'll believe it. They come to the Kabbalist because they want to believe the Kabbalist. The Kabbalist knows this. So he just has to throw them a bone. He could say a very minimal amount of things, and he says it in a vague way, and that's enough for the person who came to feel that, yeah, this really applies to me. But they don't know anything. Joseph is saying, we do not believe in man as a divine being, no matter who the individual is. If God is infinite, he is the eternal. If he is a human, he is finite. All right, and subject to death. Very good, Joseph. Very well said. Okay. Stephen is asking, if the Torah was comprehensible at the time of the giving of the Torah, why, for example, did Korach and his friends rebel? They would have known the outcome already. Well, it's true. A lot of times a person knows he's going to get punished for what he does, but his emotions get the best of him. Okay, Jack, thank you for your suggestion. Marlene is suggesting that blessings are good when it comes from a pure heart, and that can only come from a change of heart. Marlene, you're incorrect. The blessings of a person don't have any effect on reality. Okay? Okay, let's see next. Marlene in Israel is writing that, come on, Rabbi, people are worshiping this rabbi. Well, whoever worships a rabbi is violating the Torah because you're only supposed to worship God. Paul is asking, is it against halacha for a Hebrew Christian to try to convert Jews? Certainly. Certainly. Okay. Let's see. All right. Looks like the rest of the conversations are between yourselves. Marlene is saying about man-made religion while talking about Jesus, and right, that we will see when we arrive to heaven, God's willing. Okay, next. Again, we should base our ideas in what God wrote, not on our own assumptions, Marlene, okay? Okay. All right. Okay, so looks like that's the end of the questions. Okay, so I think at this point we'll wrap up today's session. And again, you can keep your eye on the, you'll see the announcements. And I hope you enjoyed the class. Again, this will be posted online shortly, so if you missed any part of the discussion, you want to hear the questions and the answers again, they will be there. If anybody has any additional questions, feel free to send an email to me through the site. And this way, I'll be able to answer your specific questions. But for now, we'll sign off. I appreciate everybody coming today. And I hope that you benefited from it. Again, probably about a half an hour or so, we will have this class posted under our audio files class. And you'll be able to hear it again. And if there's any questions that were not addressed, so feel free to send an email to the site, and they all come in, and they will be addressed. And we'll wish everybody a good day for now.